Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson! Each week we chat to a different guest about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably.
Morning, welcome back. Another episode, another day, another something or other. I should really start writing these intros, but I'm just going to wing it. This week's guest is stand-up comedian Maisie Adam. Maisie has featured in around eight of the ten cats. I think it's 8 out of 10 cats. And Mott the Week. And was nominated for Best Newcomer in the 2018 Edinburgh Comedy Awards. Maisie is touring the UK at the end of this year, which is, if you're listening to this in the future, the year 2019. And the beginning of next year, which, if you're listening in the future, is the beginning of 2020. This week we speak to Maisie about asking for help, understanding, and the fine art of tidying up. Yes, I think that's kind of it. You know the rest of it. If you've listened to this podcast before, I'm going to ask you to like, subscribe, rate, review, and all of that jazz. Tell your friends about the podcast. All the money we make goes to Calm. What else? A nice and easy intro, isn't it? That's it. It is Lauren and myself speaking to Maisie Adam.
We've got another bloody Northerner in.
Hello!
We've got Maisie Adam on with us this week.
It is going to kick off.
I was generally scared I was going to call you Adams there as well after that conversation we've just had. I was like, don't do it.
I would have dropped kicked you out of the studio.
Was like that man in Edinburgh. I got so unnecessarily angry about that. So I'm having a conversation with my dad in a cafe about Maisie and how brilliant she is. And then this guy leaned across and joined in the conversation with how brilliant Maisie is. And I was like, this is dead good. I'm going to tweet her. And then I found the tweet off the guy and he was like, oh, I leaned over because the woman was struggling to remember your name. Oh. And he implied like he kind of leaned across and like saved me from that I didn't know who I was talking about. But then the anxiety brain took over and I was like, what if Maisie genuinely thinks that I'd forgotten who she was and was like, that's this girl, right? can't really place her dad.
It's mental what people will put out onto Twitter to sort of like throw you under the bus. They're just so confident they've got the right end of the stick. They don't even think for a second. I might have misread that.
Yeah, like I would have remembered every detail about your show and not your name.
Yeah. I'm just going to help this comedian remember her fellow colleague's name. When else would that happen?
I know, it's so bizarre.
I did that classic thing of sitting there going, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thank God you're here.
Yeah.
You've saved the day. Jesus Christ.
Oh, dear.
Our first question that we ask is, when was the last time you felt calm?
Oh, when was the last time I felt calm? Yesterday. I had a day off yesterday.
Ooh.
And it was lush.
Yeah.
It was really, really nice. I've been quite busy for the whole week running up to it. And then it was just me, my boyfriend and my brother at my house. We've been watching This Is England, the TV series.
Oh, very calming TV series.
Yeah, really calming. Really good for the old mental health. It's sort of like a checklist of everything that can go wrong with your mental health in This Is England, isn't it? But it was just nice to like just chill at home with people who aren't comedians.
Yes.
And chat about stuff that's not comedy.
Mm-hmm.
We just chat absolute rubbish, to be honest, when we're together. Got a massive pizza delivered.
Nice.
Oh, it was lovely. Last week was a bit hectic. You know, when you don't know what you're doing in the days ahead and you just are solely relying on checking your Google calendar.
Yes,
yeah.
It was one of those weeks. But all I knew was that Sunday was my off day. So I proper milked it. I think I went about it like, you know when you'd pull a sickie from school and you'd lie on the sofa like watching Loose Women or like Lorraine or whatever, or The Right Stuff, just watching stuff that you never normally watch, proper milking what an off day you're having.
I think there's something lovely about watching trash and being fully aware it's trash, but you're like, I am not going to feel guilty for wasting my time here.
No,
this is my day. Can you not?
No, I honestly can't. I can't remember the last time I had a proper day off where I didn't do some work. Yeah.
What?
Because I get to, like, I'll try and relax in the mornings, like, okay, this is fine, I'm still a bit sleepy, and I just mainline coffee for a bit.
Yeah.
I get really anxious because I've drunk too much coffee. Then about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, I go, right, I'm feeling really guilty, I haven't actually achieved anything today, so I have to do some work.
Oh, so you get the guilt of not doing stuff.
So I have to do a little bit of work until about 4-ish, 5-ish. And then I can try and relax, but I can't do a whole day.
I'm getting better now. I allocate. If I've got a day off, I'm like, no, this is a day off. And then sometimes I'll get an email and be like, hey, Lauren, can you do a gig on this date? And I look and it's my only day off that week. And I think there was a time when I would have been like, yes, I'll do it. But now I'm like, no, because I'm entitled to a day off.
Yeah.
And then the day comes around and I'm like, 150 quid would have been nice, wouldn't it? But at least I've got Loose Women.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll fill the void.
Yeah.
So yes, yesterday was the first.
That's a good one. It's either like today or yesterday or years ago, whenever we ask this question.
It's
so bizarre. It's either very in recent memory or it takes about 30 seconds for someone to remember when.
There's no middle ground.
Really
I think, like, even just the word calm is so different for everybody else, though, isn't it? Like, for example, my mum, a calm day for her would be an absolute nightmare, hectic day for me.
Mm.
But she's like, oh, I've hardly done anything today. And I'm like, are you joking? You've, like, programmed a festival. Like, go for a walk.
Yes.
It's mental. Whereas calm for me is like, I'll have a whole weekend off and I'll be like, I earned that.
Yes.
I'm sometimes a little bit too calm, I think.
I think I'm turning into my mum because I've started to find cleaning quite calm.
Your face! Lauren, what the hell?
I must be getting old because I think I started following that bloody Mrs. Hinch on Instagram as well. And I was like, whoa, like,
following what?
She's the cleaning woman. So, like, she's like
Mrs.
become a
Hinge.
Millionaire. And all she did was, like, put videos of her, like, cleaning on her Instagram, and she's a millionaire
cleaning
now.
Recently? It's got, this Marie Kondo thing.
Yeah, all stems from people
I enjoy chucking shit away, but that's just because I live with a hoarder. My wife's a hoarder, so I enjoy throwing things away because it brings me great joy.
See, I like it now. Like, the other day, the top of the oven was really minging, and I dropped loads of hints and no one had cleaned it. So I got me pink stuff out, and I cleaned the oven top till it was, like, all shiny and, like, glistening,
look
and I cleaned
the
all the benches.
On your face.
Oh, and then, because I looked
you
and I
haven't
like,
spoken about anything this passionately on this podcast, and we have done more
so
than
many
30 episodes.
And just looking and like seeing how stressed and anxious it had made us, probably like, my God, no one ever cleans up. Why is nobody cleaning up? And then I cleaned up and I was like, look how pretty it is now. I love it.
This is the weirdest thing I think I've known you to do. I think there's such a line as well between having a clear out, that really de-stresses me, having a clear out and just being shot of stuff, and cleaning.
Proper cleaning.
That's weird.
I've got the little spray by the sink, and if like someone's been cooking in the kitchen doesn't smell right, I'll give it a bit of a spritz so that my kitchen smells like a tropical breeze.
Oh my God.
I feel really happy. This is the last time I felt calm talking about cleaning my house.
You've got such a big smile on your face.
This is
absolutely bizarre.
Living with Mr. Muscle.
So that's the thing, though. I think now, especially my boyfriend knows I'll clean and knows I enjoy it.
So that's why he doesn't clean.
Yeah, he's like, well, it makes her happy.
Forcing stereotypes there, mate.
Yeah.
To be fair, I came in from a whole weekend of gigs yesterday and he'd cleaned the whole place. And that was quite nice because you'll get this when like you come back from gigging away and you're like, I'm going to come home to a shitty, messy house. And I came in and he'd cleaned it all. And I was like,
it is nice.
You are.
It is nice. I used to, at uni, we used to have like cleaning rotors.
Mm.
And just, again, like what we were saying about the word calm, the word clean means so many different things to so many different people.
Yeah.
Like, you'd come back and you'd be like, Duncan, it was your turn to clean. You'd be like, I have cleaned. And you would look around the house and be like, can you point out the bits that you cleaned?
I took the bin out.
Because this is insane. This is not a clean house.
I find
house.
Certain parts of it quite therapeutic. When I used to be a sound engineer, I used to love sweeping a stage. It was the most calming thing I could do because you have to do it in a certain way. You start from the back and you brush it all to the middle, do the stage left, then you go do stage right, all down to the front, and then you sweep. It's so lovely.
I feel
lovely.
Like the only time I've ever seen someone sweep a stage is when they then burst into song. Like, I don't know if that's just me being the typical stagey person. I couldn't sweep a stage without sort of duetting with my broom. Absolutely not.
When was the first time you became aware of mental health being a thing, be it positive or negative?
God, that's a really good question. The first time I became aware of mental health being a thing.
Mm.
This is quite deep, quite quickly.
Let's do it.
But there was a girl at our school who I think we'd just got into sixth form. And I'd come right through school, like from being, you know, tiny tots with this girl. And we were not close friends in high school, but we had lots of mutual friends. Like, I maybe wouldn't hang out with her one-to-one, but she was part of a big group. And I'm sure you can guess, we were all into, like, drama and stagey stuff. We were very much the drama geeks. And seemingly out of nowhere, this girl started to really struggle with her mental health. And this would have been about 2010. And I remember she started to not attend school quite so much because her anxiety was so bad. But at the time, we didn't know that it was anxiety. We were just told that this girl was struggling with her mental health. And that seemed like such a massive thing. And because I hadn't heard anybody struggle with mental health before, if somebody took time off school, it was because their arm was broken, or it was because their mum had died, or it was something where there was a proof, or you know, there was a, you can see the reason.
Yeah.
And this girl went from being an absolute stage magnet to being too scared to come into the cafe and too anxious to talk to people, and her diet had completely changed. She was really not in a good place. And such is the way that things are at school, is that you only really ever heard half a story. So we didn't really have this understanding of what was going on with this girl. We just knew that she was no longer attending school. And some members of the group were very, very compassionate and very understanding and very supportive and would try and integrate her into the, you know, if we were doing stuff on a weekend, we'd try and get her involved. And others thought she was attracting attention. And I fully admit now, but at the time, I would sort of flick between the two. I would sometimes think, oh God, poor girl. And then other times I'd think, oh, come on. Like, and it's terrible because now, obviously, we have such more of an understanding that if that happened now, I know what my reaction would be. But at the time I was 16 and there were people also in my school who'd taken time off to have huge life-changing operations, or they'd taken time off because a parent had died. And then suddenly somebody's not turning up to your drama exam that you're part of a group in because of something that you can't see. And I think there's an element of being 16 and everything seems to revolve around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, this girl's quite selfish for just not turning up and not and leaving us to deal with whatever it is that she's not turning up and doing. And then I remember about after 2 months of her barely coming into school, and I mean once every fortnight, if at all, she came in with her mum and she just didn't even look like how she looked before she'd gone. And just seeing that, I mean, it's frustrating because you shouldn't have to see somebody physically change to know that they're going through such a rough time. But for me at 16, that is what it took for me to see and to understand it. Because people didn't talk about mental health in like PGCE or whatever. It wasn't a discussed thing. We knew what kids had, what disabilities, and we knew what, you know, we knew about things like grief and how to be more understanding with kids who were going through a hard time with that sort of thing. But we didn't know about mental health. And if there wasn't a clear, specific reason for someone to have poor mental health, it was quite difficult to get your head round.
Yeah.
And we went to a good school. We lived in a nice town. And I'm also from a family where growing up, that was sort of the response to things. I remember I would go home and say to my mum and dad about this girl, and they go, well, what's she got to be upset about? You know, and she's living in this lovely house. She's got this lovely family. She's got you lot. She's not, you know, she's got lots of friends. And of course, those things don't play into anybody. It doesn't discriminate. But you don't know that at 16. And you don't. And my parents didn't know that. Nobody had experience because these conversations that we're having now weren't happening 10 years ago. So that was the first time I was aware of it. And she's fantastic now. She's like, I see her on Instagram, she's absolutely like bloody bossing everything, so thank God she's come out the other end of it. But it got really, really bad when we were at school, and seeing that was the first time I sort of realised, actually, I think mental health, you know, poor mental health or struggling with mental health isn't the same thing as just saying, I don't want to come into school because I can't be asked. It's not that. It's a thing inside you that prevents you from doing things that you would normally jump at the chance of doing.
I don't remember anyone saying the phrase mental health at school when I was in high school at all. No.
It's weird because they teach you sex ed. They teach you, this is going to happen to your bodies are going to change, this is all normal, but no one ever sits down and is like, things in your brain might change and things in your head, and this is not, I think it should
and
be taught
the
with the same
well.
Importance.
I remember us thinking, it's so stupid when you think back to it now, but because we were taught about sex ed and like periods and stuff, a lot of us were like, maybe she's just got really bad period pains. And then we would all be like, well, we've all got period pains. You know, we all turn up with a few cramps. You know, it doesn't mean you can't turn up to your drama exam. It's like, no, this girl is really struggling with, at times, staying alive. Yeah. You know, it's not a bloody period cramp. And also, mental health was so vague.
Yeah.
It's such an umbrella term. Mm-hmm. So anxiety to us just meant sort of like how you feel before an exam. It wasn't like an actual something that you can struggle with on a day-to-day basis for no apparent reason. And the same with depression. Depression to us was like, oh, it's if it's raining and you're a bit down because you've had a breakup, or you hear a song that reminds you of your ex. Like, that's
it was
not,
almost romanticised, wasn't it?
Like, 100%.
It's like looking out of a bus window when it's raining, listening to a sad song.
And then these conversations sort of they're fantastic and they need to be had, but they sort of came across so quickly that then I think people who were still trying to understand it then thought every Tom, Dick and Harry was dropping the depression bomb everywhere. And it was like, well, hang on, just because you're sad doesn't mean you're depressed, or just because you're nervous doesn't mean you're anxious. So there was, at school, it felt like there was people who were like, no, what you need to understand is this. And there were people who were going, well, no, we've all got those, and you're just using those words because they're trendy now. And it was probably a mixture of the two, in that maybe not everybody was depressed. Some people were, you know, some people probably were overusing it. But with this specific girl, she had very poor mental health and it wasn't discussed about, and so therefore wasn't understood at the time.
I often think
about it because I'm not really in touch with her because we were never close enough to hang out one-on-one. But God, if she went through that now at school, I'd like to think that there's so much more of a conversation and understanding around it that people wouldn't be quite so, myself included, what? When you say depression, when you say anxiety, what do you even mean by that? You know, what do you mean poor mental health? What have you got to be upset about? It's not about that, you know.
Hey,
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Same at uni. I remember a girl, and if she's listening, this is no slight on you whatsoever, you're amazing, but she was doing a piece of theatre about anxiety, right. And I remember being like, so I would have maybe been either first or second year of uni, and I was just like, but we all feel like that, and we're same kind of attitude. And then I started to realise, like, as my own mental health started to change, and once I started to suddenly feel anxious, I was like, oh no, this is different.
Yeah.
Oh no, this isn't. Yeah. Oh, my bus is late and I'm going to be late for work and I'm going to get told off. This is, I can't get out of bed, and yeah. I can't. And I remember, I often think about her in that piece of theatre, and I'm like, maybe if I'd bloody gone and seen it rather than sitting there like a stroppy little 19-year-old or whatever, then maybe when them feelings did come round and hit us, I would have been like, oh, this is fine, this is okay, rather than putting it to the back of my head and being like, nope, still normal, still
but
fine.
Those kind of feelings of like, what have they got to be sad about, et cetera, et cetera, don't ever come from a place of malice.
No,
it's just a place of lack of education. Yeah.
100%. And it's 100%. Not, none of us were sort of like against this girl for watching. It was more just like you're told to try and understand something, and it's difficult to understand something.
Yeah. Especially when you've got no information about it whatsoever.
No, you've got no information, and then you've got a seemingly quite privileged young girl saying that she feels that the world is in such a way to her that she can't get out of bed or can't turn up to school. And I think it's probably a mixture of how I grew up and personal experiences as well. But I would sort of be like, you know, it's so stupid to say now. I can totally hear how stupid it sounds. But to sort of think, God, how can you look at those adverts for things like WaterAid and feel sorry for yourself, you know, in these? And it's like, well, you know, completely different contexts there.
Yeah.
Just because you live in the first world doesn't mean you can't experience poor mental health.
Yeah. And you have to be able to look after yourself before you can start looking after anyone else. You have to make sure that you're okay before you start going, right, I'm at a place now where maybe I can start spending money and helping other people.
Yeah.
Unless you're looking after yourself, you're never going to get to that point.
Yeah.
So you can't equate the two ever. It annoys me so much. I've heard it quite a lot throughout my life. It's like, why are you sad? There's all this going on.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but I'm the only person that can sort me being sad out.
Exactly.
It's on me and maybe some friends and stuff.
And that can filter into your own. If you've grown up, which I think was my experience of like other people being like, well, what have they got to be sad about? This, that then makes you like that. So when you start to feel differently, you almost normal out or brush it to the side by being like, well, what have I got to be sad about?
Because you're brought up to appreciate the things you have. But then if the slightest inkling in your brain sort of says, but I am quite sad about that, you push it aside because you're like, no, remember,
exactly.
I've got so much to be thankful about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a guilt to feel sad about things because you look around at other people who are way less fortunate and you go, God, I can't be that person that's saying I find things a bit difficult. When
I've got a lovely boyfriend and I live with my friends and I'm doing a degree that I love and I'm in a position where I can even do a degree.
Yeah.
What have I got? Like what everybody had said all around us, what have I got to be sad about? And then suddenly you hit rock bottom and you're like, oh, that was a lot of unaddressed things there. But maybe we wouldn't be in this point if back then I had just said, no, I have got something to be sad about and that's fine. Like, you can't compare. It's like, even as much as I don't like him, when someone in the paper described David Cameron as having privileged pain.
Oh, God, that was disgusting.
I've been ignoring all of those stories about him because it was awful.
They referred to the death of his son as being much more vile.
Yeah, I did read about that story.
He only ever experienced privileged pain. Mm. Ben Fogle actually wrote did you see it?
I didn't see that.
He wrote this fantastic response to it because he is obviously a very privileged, from privileged background, but he too has lost a child.
Yeah.
And just the way he responded to it in this, he just wrote this big statement thing and it was like, God, how can you for a second think that something as horrendous as the death of your child would feel differently compared to how much money you've got in the bank?
Exactly.
Because no amount of money is going to bring that person back.
Totally.
That, I think as well, when you're on about comparing, so there was that girl in the sixth form, and then I had a close friend as well who was, she had a sort of life-threatening illness, and she sadly no longer with us, but she, at the time, was in and out of hospital all the time for this thing that was very physical. She had cystic fibrosis, so in and out of hospital all the time. So you'd see her coming in and out, and she would be so desperate to catch up on any work that she had missed out, and she was so desperate to get into university because she didn't know how long she would live. So then when you're, again, I regret it now, but at 16, looking at someone like that who is so desperate to live to the fullest for as long as they can, and then you've got somebody who's coming in and not turning up to, at the time, your drama exam feels like the biggest thing in the world. So the fact when somebody doesn't turn up, you're like, well, it's totally irresponsible of them.
Yeah.
And when you've got somebody who's not turning up for mental health reasons and somebody who's not turning up because they're needing an operation on their lungs, it's very easy to compare the two and go, well, they've got an excuse. You know what, you're feeling a bit down.
Yeah.
And that whole lack of understanding is so, so dangerous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So dangerous.
I think what opened a lot of people's eyes was Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Because that was somebody who looked normal and who presented as happy and entertaining. And I think that suddenly made a lot of people go, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we didn't know someone like him was struggling.
Yeah,
I think that made a lot of people be like, oh, you can't always see it.
Yeah.
And the people who look the happiest and are the jokers in the group might be the ones who need someone to be like, are you all right? Is everything okay with you?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was on Fox News when they had the helicopter going around over his house and they were saying he had everything. Why did he do this?
Oh,
and it was just like, and it was literally hours after it happened.
It's such a lack of understanding.
It is. But like you say, I think it really changed the conversation and how people thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And how privilege doesn't have an effect. It shouldn't ever be equated.
It just doesn't discriminate in mental health.
Exactly. Couldn't have put it better.
So yes, I think that was the first time I was aware of it, but it was sort of it was such a massive umbrella term and we didn't really know the specifics of it.
Yeah.
And then nothing really happened again until university. And because I was doing a drama degree, everybody was so open with all of their emotions at the time. So the conversations, and by that time it was sort of 2013, 2014, so conversations were starting to happen.
Yeah.
And they were encouraged. It was the first time those conversations were encouraged within an education workplace, you know, environment. So it was quite different to go from a school where it was sort of like the elephant in the room that girl had mental health problems, but we don't really talk about it because none of us understand it. It's going to university where everybody spoke about it.
Yeah.
It was refreshing. It was refreshing to be around that, I think. Yeah.
What do you do in your day-to-day life to kind of look after your own mental health?
Well, I do mostly writing in the day, and I always have the radio on, Radio 1.
Okay.
Because I like Clara Amfo in the morning, and then it goes to Scott Mills, who I absolutely adore, in the afternoon. And I quite like working around them too.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of like, just breaking it up. I think if I ever tried to work for 3-4 hours solidly writing, first of all, the material would be shit, I know. But also, just being a bit kind to yourself, and if nothing's coming, take a break and make a brew, relax into it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, Lauren, but like with writing comedy, it's not like a job where you turn up at the desk at 9 a.m. and you can just come out with comedy gold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You kind of have to sort of be thinking sort of wider into the world, which is why I like the radio, because it's the public that ring in and it's public sort of observations and personalities that are interviewed and talked about. So I quite like just taking things slow, I guess, is my thing for the day, because once you go out in the evening to gigs, like tonight. I'll be running to, and I've got one in North London, then running to Kingston, and then back to Brighton.
Bloody hell.
Evenings are always a bit like, right, I've got to go here, there, and there a lot more, and you've got to be on and thinking, right, what am I talking about tonight? I need to do that new bit, or I need to do this bit, or we rework that bit. So the days, I make sort of quite a conscious effort to calm it down and just enjoy it. There's nobody meeting a deadline except me.
Yeah.
If I've, you know, if it gets to 5 p.m. and I've got to get ready to go out for a gig and I've not written that new bit that I needed to, I've got tomorrow to do it. Mm. Like, I've got...
I think we convince ourselves there's such a rush in everything we do.
Yeah.
I do especially, like, maybe ourselves is a bit of a generalisation there. But you just feel like you've built deadlines into your day anyway. And you just like that sense that you're just saying, just take it slow.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I did anything where I just went, do you know what, I'm just going to take my time with this and enjoy actually doing it.
Yeah.
Especially when you're writing comedy as well, because it's one of those things you can't just churn out gag after gag. I had someone come to me last week and it was like, we need 30 jokes by 5 o'clock today. I was like,
well, did you tell them where to go?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Like, that's not how jokes work.
Exactly.
But yeah, we do. We just kind of put all of these pressures on ourselves. And I don't think it's very rare that any of us ever go, do you know what? I'm going to chill out for a bit.
Yeah.
Or just go, like,
and as you say,
easy.
Often these deadlines are ones that we've put on ourselves. Mm. Like, don't get me wrong, sometimes I do have a deadline and I'm not turning around then and going, actually, I'd quite like to take it slow.
Yeah,
like, no, I do.
No, when the time calls for it,
I do meet the deadlines. But then sometimes if it's just like, oh, I need to, I'd like to have written some new bits by that gig I've got next Tuesday. If I've only got one new bit by that, fine.
Exactly.
There's nobody going to be sat in that audience that evening going, she's not, these are exactly the same jokes she did in Marlow last Wednesday.
That's a really good
point. It's just not, we in our heads. Build it up in our heads,
Do you play a game?
Yes.
Love a game.
I've made a game. Right, so you've got to pick a number between 1 and we've done that one and we've done that one. 1 and 17.
1 and 17. Let's go with 16.
16.
We were talking about when we were 16.
So that's... this one. Right, would you rather...
Oh, love these.
...that things don't go to plan or there is no plan?
Things don't go to plan.
Yeah.
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 I cannot be doing with people who don't make a plan.
Exactly.
I'd rather there be a plan and it not work out.
And then you can deal with that as it happens.
Because then you also feel like, oh, I'm so good at problem solving. If things go tits up, you're like, I dealt really well with that.
Yeah.
Whereas if there's no plan, the fact that you've just like done something, it's like, oh, well, that fell to me. And it should have been. I can't.
I'm not going to bother leaving the house if there isn't a plan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't have a plan in my house. So,
it's like if people are like, oh, do you want to do something tonight? And I'm like, yeah, what? And they're like,
oh my God.
I'm like, no, I need to know what. I'd rather them be like, okay, we're going to go to this pub. And then so we get to that pub and it's closed. Okay, that hasn't gone to plan, but we'll go to another pub.
Yeah, and it also means that like when you're getting ready for that, you know, like we're going to a pub tonight.
Yeah.
So you don't turn up in bloody wedding attire. Like, you've got, even if that pub is shut, you're still appropriately prepared for whatever is the backup.
These people who can just have days with no plans. You know, they're always really smug as well, aren't they, on the internet? Where they're like, oh, we woke up, just decided to see where life would take us. I'm like,
Absolutely not. Even my days off have a plan.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I was like, my plan is to watch This Is England and eat pizza.
Yeah.
And you know what? I ticked everything off that list. So
I'm good at short-term plans. I don't have any life goals.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I can do like week by week. It's absolutely fine. But I don't have any aspirations in my life whatsoever. Maybe that's more of a comment on me than anything else, to be honest.
Yeah, I kind of, when people are like, so where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Yeah.
I'm like, being 30. That's it. That's all.
Exactly.
I don't really.
It's like when job interviews ask you it as well, when they're like, oh, where do you see? I remember when I was working at Boots and I had the interview. She was like, where do you sort of see yourself in 5 years? And I was like, not working at Boots.
Yep.
And apparently that wasn't the answer she wanted. But
who is asking a Boots employee where they see themselves in five years?
Yes. I plan to be Mrs. Boots by this point.
What did they want you to say?
Exactly.
Like,
she did actually say it was that she thought it would be more of a career option. And I was like, look, if you want a career in retail and to be a manager, that is fine. But I was like 18 after a part-time job while I was at uni. And I I was like, this isn't forever. This is not forever.
So weird. No.
Just on that, boots, I would say probably up there with worse uniforms.
Yes.
Why are they all dressed like dental nurses?
Tabard. And then the navy, like, sort of jacket you had to wear. And mine, I don't know if everyone's was like this, but mine had no armpits in it. So I had the sleeves and I had the jacket. But
she
gave
you that one because you didn't have a 5-year plan.
My 5-year plan is to have a jacket with armpits in it. And so anytime I would lift to stack something on the shelf, I'd have like a little pit hole.
Oh my God.
Me little tabard. I once got wrong because my tabard wasn't white enough. And I was like,
what?
What were you doing in your tabard?
It was just the cut. Like, you know, when you get a white top and you wash it and then it becomes more of like an off white. It was off white and
holes in the armpits.
Boots, yeah. It's like the whiteness.
Looking like
so
a maniac.
Surprised you didn't still wear that, Lauren.
Did I ever tell you about the time I turned up after a night out and she sent me to the makeup counter to get me makeup done because I looked a disgrace?
No!
So I thought it was a treat and I was buzzing because I was like, my first job, and I was like, oh my God, I'm getting to sit on the makeup counter. And then I came back and they were like, yes, because you looked like shit.
Oh my God.
I mean, it looked amazing after Gillian had worked on it.
I'm just seeing you sat in this chair being like, oh, but they all wish they could get this. No, it's like the sin bin for the employees.
Someone behind us with a bell like, shit.
We've got about 5 minutes left if you want to do our last question.
Yeah, so our last one is, if you could go back to your younger self and give you some advice on like mental health and living without misery, what would you tell yourself?
God, that's such a good question. This is a really good podcast, can I just say?
Thank you.
That's the advert. Yeah.
If I could go back and tell myself one piece like of advice for improving mental health.
Yeah, just in general.
My mental health or understanding mental health.
Ooh, either or.
Good, yeah.
Well, I would certainly go back to sort of prepubescent era maze. Era. Like a genre of music. Sort of like, you know, like 13, 14, when the world just revolves around you and you're so blinkered, mm-hmm. I would really like to go back and just sort of tell 13-year-old, 14-year-old Maisie to kind of be a little bit more aware of other people's, not feelings, but mental health. Like, not just, you know, are they angry, are they sad, but how are they mentally? Are they okay? And it's not a... Just to have more of the conversations that we've got now that would make me realise that poor mental health isn't always just feeling sad or angry. It's mm-hmm. it's a whole concoction of things sometimes for loads of different reasons. The fact that it doesn't discriminate. And I tell myself that for other people in high school, because I was very fortunate to have a lovely time at high school. And I don't think I really experienced any sort of poor mental health until university. If I could go back to there, I would want to tell her to... Sorry, I would want to tell her to not be so... So ashamed of it. I was so... Because my only experience had been of that girl at high school and she had been this massive sort of enigma of no one really knew what was going on with her. But it really, I remember seeing how much it physically changed her. And I knew I didn't feel right at uni. And I was having a really rough time, had a horrendous breakup. And then it was really like sort of... it was more like a playground than any time at primary school. It was mm-hmm. so, you know, picking sides and all of that and really isolating and really lonely. And I think through that, I tried to tell myself I wasn't having poor mental health because my own experience of it had been this. And I was so determined to not be that. And so determined. I think there's an element as well of when you've had a breakup, you're trying to come across as like your best version of yourself.
Yeah.
So it was that battling with like, internally feeling absolutely rock bottom horrendous. And so I would go back to tell me at that point in my life to just acknowledge how you're feeling. Stop trying to pretend it's not happening. Mm-hmm. Because it's not something that if you pretend it's not happening, it eventually goes away. You have to acknowledge it. You have to. And I didn't for so long until actually I'd left uni and I came home and my mum and dad were like, you seem very angry at the moment. You're very short-tempered. Mm-hmm. My dad does that awful thing whenever I'm short-tempered of asking me if I'm on my period. And eventually he'd asked that and my mum said that I was very snappy. And it just all came came out, and I think I thought I was just going to snap for 2 minutes and say, look, actually, no, mm-hmm. I'm, you know, this is, and it half an hour later, I've got like streaming mm-hmm. tears and all mm-hmm. of this. And I remember my mum and dad being like, good God, what's going on here? And it was because whilst it was happening at uni, I hadn't acknowledged it face on. And like this girl at school, I had loads of friends who probably would have understood, but it was a mixture of me not saying it and them also not knowing if it was mm-hmm. me just being post-breakup maze or me being in a really dark place, mate. And I don't think I knew at the time. Mm. I think I was like, this is what everybody's like after a breakup. Oh, yeah, exactly, you know, I'd never had a breakup that big before. So I was like, everybody has this. It's mm-hmm. fine. I'm just going to get my degree and get out of here, which I did. But I don't think I was able to sort of get out of that place mentally until I'd acknowledged it. Mm-hmm. So, I'd go to 13-year-old Maze and tell her to just have a little bit more awareness and understanding and talk, have those conversations with my friends. And I'd go to 19-year-old Maze and tell her to not date a dickhead again and to acknowledge when you're feeling like how you're, and you don't have to be suicidal. I think that was a massive part of mm-hmm. mental health for me. Mm-hmm. I was like, people with more poor mental health are checking into rehab. They're doing what that girl at school did. I'm not hearing voices. I'm still turning up for all my classes. I was bloody miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, really, really miserable. But turning up to everything because I didn't want the flack of if I didn't turn up, I'd get even more flack, mm-hmm. and that would make everything worse. So I just went in with this sort of, again, probably to do with how I was brought up, but this just power through, you know, blinkers on, mm-hmm. it's fine. And it's not always just because you're suicidal. It's not always just because you've got voices. It can be, you know, I wasn't just sad. I wasn't just a bit mopey after a break. I was really, really down. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I ever took the time for myself to actually like acknowledge it. Mm. I think I was just sort of like bury your head in the sand and it'll go away eventually. It was only when it all came out that I realised, like, my mum and dad were going, God, this isn't you. And I was like, fuck, no, it's not. Yeah. Like, Jesus. None of us had really clocked. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realise I was being that angry with my mum and dad. Mm-hmm. And I know now that I was being that angry at them because I'd felt so on my own and I knew I wasn't. Yeah. And I was like, you're my family. You're supposed to know when I'm down. You're supposed to be there for me. But I was just being arsy mm-hmm. and not actually saying why.
Yeah,
I would just want me to be a lot more open about it from the start and talk about it. And I think if I'd have had podcasts like this and the conversations that we're having now, you know, on TV, just everywhere in the media now, it's so discussed, which is great because people will see those feelings that we've all had represented. And also, like, growing up, all of the depression stories we had growing up, there was like a postnatal depression storyline on EastEnders or Corrie or whatever, and it was really dramatic. Mm-hmm. And that was the only sort of depression I had experience of. And I was like, well, I don't have that. I've not got a baby and I've not got, you know, I don't want to be throwing myself off a bridge. Mm-hmm. I just don't know why I'm feeling so down.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
Brilliant. There we
go. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences. We can help each other know that things do get better.
And that's it. That's the end of episode. End of this episode. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Lauren. Thank you to Maisie. You can go see it on tour. You should. Her show, Hangfire, which was at Edinburgh this year, the year 2019, was absolutely fantastic. And everyone should go see it if you can. Thank you to Dave. Thank you to Calm. And what else? I don't know. Go donate some money to Calm. They're a good company. Company? Charity? Company? Endeavour? Mission? I don't know. Go give them some money. Even though you just give money with your ears, you can give extra money, can't you? You've probably got a couple of quid in your pants or something. Right, that's us until next week. Do I need to thank anyone else? Thank you. Thank you. Bye. Love you, bye. Bye, 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 bye. Love you, bye, bye.
We
would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I know what this one is. That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.